Well, after a nice Turkey Day break and some time off with family, we've come back for another week of the Loveland Sports Podcast, courtesy of Loveland Magazine, here with my co-host Mark Rains. Did you get enough turkey over the break there, Mark?
I got plenty.
Well, we have a lot to talk about sports-wise. I figure we might change it up and kind of follow the model that we did last week and start off with some positives talk before we get to the many, many negative things that happened last week. Just a quick getting into the Wolverines a little bit.
Oh, I was
13.
gonna say, it's crazy. I was gonna suggest that because the only positive things that's happened since we left for are the Wolverines, who went and took down Xavier and then Ohio State in football in the same week. So good job by your Wolverines.
Yeah, I figured it was two fan bases that you're not necessarily huge fans of in terms of Xavier and Ohio State got a little comeuppance this week, courtesy of the Wolverines.
Yeah, that was the both of those games were quite enjoyable. The pretty much the most fun of the games that I've gotten to watch since we last talked. So, yeah, how about that?
Yeah, so I did put my money where my mouth was to a certain extent. I did not take the Wolverines on the money line, of course. I did take them on the points and that they would score over, I think there was 10 and a half was their total points. So it's pretty shockingly low number, and it turned out to be not much more than that. But I don't know if you got this impression watching the game, Mark, but especially looking back on it, that first drive for Ohio State was essentially what I thought would be the entire game. I mean, we were giving their receivers 5 to 7 yards of cushion, and they were just nickeling and diming us down the field. And then they took their shot and got a pass interference, and they really never went back to that model. It was shocking to me looking back at it.
Yeah, it seemed like they've tried to run the ball and they struggled running the ball. They've honestly struggled running the ball against good teams most of the year, but eventually their passing game will break through and break people down. But Michigan has got a really good defense, and I think that game stayed close and it got in their heads a little bit, and Michigan was able to take advantage.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting too. A lot of people have made this point, as even Ohio State fans, and I think it's got some truth to it in the sense that, when Lou Holtz took that shot at Ryan Day, Ryan Day came out and was pretty vocal against Lou Holtz specifically. I think Ryan Day, to a certain extent, takes things personally, and the fact that Michigan, ran the ball on them so well these past couple of years, he took that to heart and he said, okay, well, we're going to flip the script and we're going to do that to you. And when it was clear that it wasn't working, he just stuck with it, and it was unreal. And you have two of the best wide receivers in the game, and they said it was windy and this and that, and I just think he got locked up in his pride and he refused to budge and thought that they were just the better team and they were going to walk away with it. And running into the teeth of our two best players on defense for the entire game just did not work out for them. So.
Well, and as flawed as the Michigan offense was, they kept Ohio State off the field for a lot of the second half, particularly the fourth quarter. They moved the ball up and down. They ran the ball, took their time. And Ohio State did not have that many opportunities in the second half.
Yeah. And I think it was that, the long Mullings run at the end really to get it close and then to pretty much ice the game. And but you've also got a penalty, right? It's third down and they have too many men on the field and it gets Michigan a first down and it just allows more of that clock to bleed off. And just a crazy penalty by Ryan Day and that team to allow that to happen. And I don't want to get too far into it, but they have the flag planting at the end and then the after the game antics, and it just has kind of all the hallmarks of the Ohio State Michigan rivalry for better or worse. And I'm happy we won. I personally don't think I didn't want it to end that way with the stuff going on at the end of the day, but a win's a win, four straight. And now Michigan's got, a top seven recruiting class next year for 2025. So I hope we can, this will be the start of a turnaround for the Wolverines. I mean, they're going to go to the Valero Alamo Bowl or the Pinstripe Bowl or something. So, and Ohio State is going to keep playing for a national championship. So, kudos to them and let's see if they can make it. But this is our bowl game. This is our national championship for this year. And I'm happy we won. So.
What a swing, four in a row after not seeming to be able to get over the hump against them for a long time. I know fans were worried about Harbaugh not being able to get over the hump, and he got over the hump, and this program seems to be rolling against the Buckeyes.
Yeah, and I think it's all hopefully it's all uphill from here. Miller Moss, the enter the transfer portal from USC. I know he struggled there, but he's a big transfer portal target for the Wolverines. So, and it, we have a lot of good players coming back, and especially on defense as well. So, next year has the potential to be a pretty good year, and then after that, you're riding the Bryce Underwood train as far as that will go. So, I'm excited, and it's a pretty nice way to end the season because a lot of the guys won't be playing the bowl game, so I'm happy for that and looking forward to what the future has for the Wolverines. But contemporaneously to that, we had the Bearcats on Saturday. Things didn't go as planned for them on the good old football field, and Mark, not the way we wanted the season to come to its conclusion for the Bearcats, that's for sure.
Five straight losses to end the season. And you knew the schedule was backloaded. You knew they'd have to play at Colorado. You knew they had to play at Iowa State. You knew they had to play at Kansas State. And those games were teams that were better than this UC team. And so you had to get the games against West Virginia at home and against TCU at home, and they didn't get them. You were hope you could have stolen one of the road ones, but you had to get the ones at home, and they didn't do it. And both games really came down to crucial mistakes. UC came out to start the TCU game, forced a three and out, and then the ball gets punted, and it lands short. The punt returner Mays doesn't catch it, lets it bounce, and for some reason tries to pick it up way down the road and muffs it. After it's been bouncing several times, and they give the ball right back to TCU, who scores a touchdown on a short field, and the defense held up their end all game long, but you give them a couple short fields, and now they get touchdowns on those short fields, and now you're playing from a deficit, and you never are able to come back on a cold, snowy night.
And I keep coming back to this because it's easy for me to talk about, but Brendan Sorsby again, 21 completions, just 160 yards and an interception. And I think how much of the weather do you think plays into those numbers? Like you said, cold and snowy, not great conditions. Did that play a role in that at all, or was there something else that worked for Sorsby there?
Probably some, and I think the wide receivers are really struggling too. I think that's part of it. There were some balls that were dropped that he put out there. The interception was just a terrible read. I mean, he's dropped back. He had plenty of time, and as soon as he threw the ball, you could see he was throwing it in double coverage, and you saw the defensive players were in better position than he was to on running the route. So, I mean, it was just a bad decision on that interception. He was very up and down the last half of the year. He really struggled throwing downfield, but he showed a lot early in the season. And the big news of the day is that he is committed to coming back here next year. And I think that's a really big deal because you're not starting with a new quarterback for the third straight season. You're going to have a guy who showed a lot as a sophomore, who had some struggles the second half of the year that we've talked about ad nauseum, but that you hope can make that big leap in his second year in a system as a junior in college. I mean, that's really the perfect time for a quarterback to take that next step they need to take. So, really, some good news that he's coming back next year if this team's going to right the ship and really have a strong season.
And we're going to have a ton of time, to talk about it generally, over the off season. But if there's anything you want to talk about the TCU game, feel free. Just kind of a general question for the Bearcats next year. We've talked about, them getting better and taking a few steps forward. And we talked about this on Twitter too. I mean, there's some UC fans that see this team has hit kind of their ceiling and that they may take a step back next year. With Sorsby coming back, do you feel like this team has a chance to be better, at least from this point in the season? I know it's a long way off.
So coming into this year, I thought the offense would be a lot better, and the question was going to be the defense. And for the first part of the season, that was the case. But the offense really struggled and didn't make the steps that I thought they would take this year. And the defense surprised me. And the defense is where they should have a lot back, especially the young guys that were playing on that defensive end. So I think the defense in a second year with the new defensive coordinator, with a lot of young guys back who showed that they can do. And I just want to stress, we've not seen Dante Corleone say he's going to the NFL yet? And a lot of the guys that are leaving have said we're leaving already. So I know everybody seemed to assume that Corleone would go into the NFL draft this year, but he's only a junior. He could be back again and not dealing with the medical issue at the beginning of the year. So I think the defense is going to be strong. And the big question on what's going to happen next year is, can the offense take a big step? Because Satterfield was brought here as an offensive coach. And I schematically, I see a lot of things I like and a lot of missed opportunities. There's things that I'm encouraged by, but he has had two bad offenses, or two at least underachieving offenses, his first 2 years. In the first year, you could chalk it up to new system, quarterback play. But this year, they really struggled down the stretch, and the points per game plummeted as the passing game struggled. The run game got going in the second half of the year, but it wasn't enough to outsess the passing game. So that's going to be the big question, is can they take that jump offensively? I think you're going to need to find some weapons in the portal, in the passing game in particular. And then you have to hope Sorsby makes that leap, and you have to hope you're able to replace the offensive lineman they're losing. And I do think last year in the portal, they did a lot to shore up the offensive line for this coming year. They brought a lot of they had everybody back last year on the offensive line, but they still went and were aggressive in bringing in young guys who I think they're looking to take over next year on the offensive line. So I think they did a lot. Let's see if it works out. Let's see if they targeted the right guys going into next season, because those are the big questions. This team's not making another leap unless the offense makes a leap. I think the defense is going to be better again next year, be improved. Offense has to bring it too.
Now talk about the level, I guess, of Satterfield's seat and how hot it is. I mean, he's obviously going to be back next year. If they don't make a bowl game next year, let's say hypothetically, do you see the Bearcats moving on from him as the head coach, or does he have more in the tank even if they don't make it back to a bowl game?
Well, it's hard to predict what an athletic department's going to do, and just the structure of his contract makes it very hard to move on from him until after year four. However, if he does not make a bowl game next year, they absolutely should move on. My personal opinion is this team needs to be winning 8 games next year. This season, I know it's going to be a 5-win season on paper, but this team should have won 6 or 7 games. It did not close. It did not win games it should have won down the stretch. They blew 3 or 4 close games. They had every opportunity to win. When it comes to the Pitt game, the West Virginia game in particular, those were both completely blown games where they should have won. They were the better team throughout the game. The TCU game, they made some stupid plays to blow. They could have won the Texas Tech game. This team, the improvement they made is better than a 5-7 team, but they didn't come and they didn't do it. And so now you're like, the jump for this team next year isn't win a couple more of those games you should have won. It's build on that. It's be an 8-win team, because I mean, this team underachieved. This team should have won more games than it did. And I'm not one of those UC fans who is like, we need to move on from Satterfield right away. Those kind of things happen sometimes in the course of a season, especially in this game. We had a young quarterback this year, and I think a lot of it came down to Sorsby making mistakes and not making the plays when it mattered in those games, other than Texas Tech, where I thought he was brilliant the entire game, and gave them every opportunity to win. We just missed a couple field goals, but it came down to Sorsby not making them. But you got to treat this as this team was right there in all those games. This team actually played one of the hardest schedules in the country. I think if you rank it by like the old BCS system, they had the 13th best schedule in the country. They played everybody at the top of the Big 12. So, I mean, so it was a tough, again, it was a backloaded schedule. It was a tough schedule. They had opportunities. It's not about getting to a bowl game next year. This team needs to be in the top part of the conference. Maybe not necessarily winning it, maybe not even being there right there for a conference championship game, but it needs to be an 8-win team. It needs to be an 8 or 9-win team. And that if we're not there, Satterfield, there's some real questions about Satterfield. I think they need to seriously think about moving on. I don't think they will unless he's down around 500 again, like 6 wins or 5 wins. And then I think there's a decent chance they would. But this team needs to jump again.
Well, and on that nice transition, I think we'll go maybe to the Bengals now so we make sure we have enough time to get to all the stuff we want to get to for them in terms of teams that need to find a way to make a big jump in 2025 because you let Russell Wilson Old man Russell Wilson come out of the woodwork and throw for over 400 yards as the Steelers beat the Bengals last week 44-38 in yet another patented shootout game that we simply cannot win. Jamar Chase once again, to reporters is being very candid and saying, well, what do you guys have to do to win games? And he said, well, I guess we basically have to score every possession because we can't, we obviously can't stop anyone. And I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but the man is absolutely correct. And this was just yet another game that proved that. And the Steelers offense, I think, was allowing something like 16, 17 points per game in their last few. And the Bengals score 38 and still lose, Mark. And it's just frustration after frustration, isn't it?
Yeah, highest point total against San Diego all year up till that point, loss. Highest, I think I'm sure it was the highest total against the Steelers all year, loss. They, the de just when you think the defense can't top itself, they come off a bye week and put that game together. 400 yards for Russell Wilson after getting the pick six to start get us started. I've just it is frustrating, and it has to be so frustrating for the offensive players because they are doing everything in their power. And I know there were a couple bad plays. They allowed a defensive touchdown, a defensive touchdown for the Steelers. And Burrow also lost a couple fumbles over the course of the game. But he's got to try to do so much for this team over the course of the game that stuff like that is bound to happen against a great defense. And he had another exceptional day. They moved the ball up and down the field against a great defense all game long. And it didn't matter. It didn't matter because they couldn't get stops. And it's been the problem all year. They can't get stops. Nobody besides Hendrickson can do anything on this defense. The safeties are as bad as they could possibly be. I don't know what to do. I mean, they've ran that four verticals play over and over again and then just checked down to the running back for nice yards because they were so deep on their drops. Just an awful game. Awful game for the defense and of what we've seen as an awful season.
Right. And I just, the numbers, I mean, if I just told you in a vacuum, 309 yards passing and three touchdowns and Chase Brown, 12 carries, 100 yards, or 12, sorry, 12 carries, 70 yards, another 40, 30 yards, excuse me, for him in the air. He had 100 total yards against that kind of defense. And you're still not even, really close to winning because your defense is so terrible. I mean, these numbers are just being thrown down the garbage. And, I don't know how these guys keep wanting to play every week with that kind of effort being put out. It we can't stop anyone.
Well, it's funny. There's that stat you always see, like teams that run 20 times win, or teams with running backs that win 20 times win so many more games. And you can see why, right? Because if the Bengals defense had gotten stops and the Bengals offense is putting up points, they would have ran Chase Brown 20 times that game. But they, you find yourself in a 17-point deficit because the defense can't stop anybody and they got to stop running. And Chase Brown was great that game. But you got to move up and down the field and try to get your points and get your touchdowns. And can we talk about that last defensive play? How do you let that happen? The announcer knows it. Everybody knows they're running the zone read, and everybody knows Fields is likely to keep it and run outside. How do you not stay home on that? And we got a gift. They had that
Yes.
holding call that saved us 40 seconds. We got to decline it and save 40 seconds. They're going to have over a minute to go when they got the ball back. Just how do you let that happen? It's just such a terrible play, and it costs you a chance to win the game.
And I'm just on so many levels, right? Because there's a coaching level where obviously they've seen Justin Fields on film come into these games where Russell Wilson is the starter. He's not interested in throwing the pass, right? That has to be drilled in each week, part of the preparation. And then when the players are on the field watching it happen, I mean, they have to be accountable for knowing what's coming. And it looked like it was the first time they had ever seen that type of play from Justin Fields in their entire lives with the game on the line. And it just shows the entire systemic failure of it all from coaching down to the players, down to their situational awareness. And that was a microcosm of it. It was just yet another example of we needed a play to win the game and got nothing.
Yeah, it's the one way you can't let them beat you. If they get the power run and he breaks a couple tackles to get the first down, or they move you out of the way in the middle. I know you're trying to stop the run, but what they do it. You know that's what's coming. You have to have somebody keep contain. Like even if you have somebody beat the cane and then he makes a move on him, gets around him, that's one thing. But you have to have somebody there in contain. All he had to do was run to the sideline. It is just atrocious to lose that way. It's not, he didn't get blocked. It wasn't like that. You know, like again, if they run it, if they ended up giving it to the running back and the running back and you know the offensive line makes a couple blocks and they're able to get the first down, so be it, right? You're trying, that's different. If they read it right and Fields made a miss, it's different. But he wasn't in position to make a play when you knew that play was likely to come. Just, it's so frustrating, and it's been a microcosm of the entire season.
Yeah, I mean, and there's not much that else that you can say in this game. You know, I do kind of want to make the point that for his benefit at least, McPherson was 1 for 1 and 5 for 1 for 1 in field goals, 5 for 5 in extra points. He hit from 38, so that was at least some sort of positive. And then you've obviously got another classic game from Chase with 86 receiving yards. And T. Higgins again, 69 receiving yards. So the offense is obviously doing just fine. And I wanted to talk a little bit about Orlando Brown Jr. Came back for this game. He didn't look right, I think. He was responsible for, you know, one of the sacks, I think the strip sack on Burrow. And with Micah Parsons coming next week for Dallas, this offensive line has to get right pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard against the Steelers' defensive line. They are so good. And I thought Burrow had, you know, had time at various points throughout the game, but their defensive line made their play. So I don't know. It was his, he hasn't played a lot this year, so I do think he struggled at times. But I mean, it wasn't why they lost the game. Like I don't, I it's hard for me to be too critical of the offensive line against the Steelers when you put up that many points.
True.
Because that defensive line's awesome. That defense is awesome.
Well, I don't think there's much more to lament about the Steelers game other than just another, again, the clock repeats itself. But I want to talk a little bit about the Monday night game against the Cowboys and some of the opportunities that it maybe presents for the Bengals going against what we've said before, a backup quarterback slash average quarterback in Cooper Rush. I think the Bengals defense does have a chance maybe to redeem itself a little bit, although they will be without Logan Wilson, who had some surgery to clean up some ligaments in his knee, and he'll be out for he's on the IR right now, so probably be out for the rest of the year. So yet another injury there on that defense that we have to deal with. But it's a Simpsons broadcast, I guess, Mark, so we got that going for us.
Over under Cooper Rush 69.5% completion percentage.
I think it's probably, I mean, I think it's going to be under, but at the same time, I feel like Lamb is definitely going to burn that secondary for at least one or two big plays.
I would take the under, and my hope is that he just doesn't end up converting enough plays down the field to make it matter or take the over. I mean, Watson did it, right? Watson was completing passes all over the field against him. And he luckily didn't do anything with it because he didn't know how to, he didn't throw downfield. He didn't make any plays, you know, where it mattered. But I don't know. This team hasn't shown they can stop anybody from completing a high percentage of passes.
And that's true. And it's so interesting too to look at Rush's numbers. I mean, he threw for almost 400 yards against Houston, but in that epic, you know, Philadelphia game where they got torched, he threw for just 45 yards. So he's been very up and down. And I think Lamb, you know, being in and out of the lineup probably has affected that a little bit. But you know, with every Bengals game, we kind of look at what does the other team's offense looks like, because if we can't stop that, we're not going to win, basically. I'm not going to say this defense can stop Dallas's offense, but if it comes down to maybe a last drive situation, I'd rather have Cooper Rush, you know, facing us versus Lamar Jackson at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll probably win. I don't know, but it's not. I've thought that a lot this year, and we've lost. But I still think Cooper Rush is gonna. When you look at his numbers at the end of the day, he's gonna complete a lot of passes.
Yeah. It is pretty ridiculous in terms of his percentages. So, excuse me, we will see there. I, you know, I'd like to see the Bengals win in terms of being in front of a national audience, but really this is the underachiever bowl, kind of as I wrote online today. I think there's no probably two fan bases that are as angry and as frustrated as Bengals and Cowboy fans, and for different reasons, obviously, but they both want to fire their head coach. They're both tired of underperforming, but the Cowboys have won two straight. They're riding a little bit of momentum coming into this game, and I'm not sure that that's going to help us very much at the end of the day.
Yeah, I get both fan bases had high expectation and should be frustrated, but man, wasting Joe Burrow having what is an MVP season, basically any year that you win that your defense is even bad and not like the worst in the NFL bad, is one of the most frustrating things you could possibly watch. Because he's having a historically great year. He's matching Hall of Fame quarterbacks that won MVPs and Super Bowls, and it is as frustrating as it can get to watch him week after week put up great numbers, move this offense, put up, I think we're now what 2-4 scoring like 33 plus, and the rest of the NFL's lost like one game doing that this year or something to that effect. I mean, like it is just beyond absurd.
Right. And week in and week out, we've had the number one, passer in terms of yardage, the number one receiver in terms of yardage, and the number one sack specialist. I mean, Trey Hendrickson leads the NFL in sacks. I mean, you would think with those numbers aligned, this team, there's no way this team could have just 4 wins, but yet here we sit. So, and I saw this quote, Mark, and I'm not sure, how much it matters, but Lou Anarumo saying they're definitely sticking with Geno Stone, like he's our guy for the future. And I get that you're a coach and you have to, stand behind your players, but to just see that, after how badly he's played, it just is kind of a stake through the heart of the expectations of the fans that we're learning from these games. We're taking something from them and we're going to have some sort of change in the future. But just to bury your head in the sand kind of and say, oh, we're going to stick with, with our guys because they're our guys. It's the same thing over and over and nothing's changing and it gives the fans no hope.
Well, they don't have a lot of other options right now. I don't know. Are they really going to stick with him in the offseason? Are they not going to try to address safety in some way, some manner? I don't know. I guess we'll see. Their options are so bad at safety. There's nobody there. And I don't know what the answer is.
And I don't think there is one. And I just think kind of people latched onto that quote as, not even Lou saying we need to play better or we need to try to find something to get a better look at that position just to say, nope, we're going to keep doing what we're doing and, not change anything. So I think from a fan's perspective, you can understand why that might be a little frustrating. But, like you said, from an organizational perspective, there's no body to put there. He is what it is, so just frustrating all around. And I really hope it gets turned around this week, if not just for, the team's sanity, but for the fans as well, just to see a win finally. But at some point, right, you're just going to either hurt your draft prospects by continuing to win just enough to get a bad pick, or you're going to be stuck with a bad team just going down to the wire and having a great draft pick. So I'm just not seeing a lot of positives that remain in this season for Cincinnati, unfortunately.
Go win games. I that's my answer for this team. This team can't be concerned about having a top five pick. Go win games.
And just pray that if they do have that middle round draft pick, that they do the best what they can and
They
maybe
get the
buck
right
the
guy.
trend. Yeah,
Yeah.
let's hope. So understandable. Well, I think for the last part of it, probably move on to a little bit of basketball before we cut it for the night. College basketball. Bearcats had a tough one this week. Picked up their first loss of the season. What'd you see there, Mark?
I thought a lot of UC fans were taking Nova a little too lightly. I don't think the team did. I just think they got beat on that night. Nova is a very talented team. I don't think they're particularly well coached, but that's going to make you up and down, right? But you're still capable of having really good games, which is what they did against Cincinnati. Eric Dixon is maybe the best player in the country. He is incredible. He's scoring 30 plus over and over again. I thought UC for the most game did pretty well on him, and he still got what 30. And he crushed us at the end. He hit two just back-breaking threes. But you know they made him work. He took a lot of shots to get his points for most of the game. But the problem was their other guys beat us, and their other guys scored efficiently when he wasn't scoring, and so we didn't get enough stops, and then we didn't sh make enough shots to kind of keep up. And then the other issue is they got to the foul line and we didn't, and that's been an issue for this Cincinnati team all year, as far as is they don't get to the foul line very often, and that's the most efficient way to score. Even if you're a bad free throw shooting team, it's the most efficient way to score. You shoot 60% from the line, that's 1.2 points per possession, not counting the one and ones. So I mean, that's the best way to score, is get to the foul line. And UC doesn't do a great job getting to the foul line. And in a game like this, when you're not shooting it as well, it's something that really could have given you an opportunity to get a couple more baskets and been in a position to win at the end.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, Villanova, I mean, they've had a little bit of a down year this year, but watching one of their best players, as you said, kind of tear it up on the court, they look like a different team out there against the Bearcats, and it was kind of an interesting game to watch them kind of get punched in the mouth and try to fight back, and maybe this first loss early on, they learn something from it and get better as they get into conference play in a little while.
Yeah, it's hard to win on the road. It's if you watch the Big East, Big 12 Challenge, this first night, two nights, all the games were at Big East places, and the Big East teams went 4-2. You know, it's hard to win on the road. And the one thing I kind of tried to point out to people is Villanova had played pretty well their last three games. You know, they crushed a bad Penn team. They lost by one on the road to a really good Maryland team, and they crushed a bye team in Rider. And so they looked like a team that was kind of coming into form going into that game after a slow start. And they were going to have the best player on the floor, and they did have the best player on the floor. UC is still without Skillings, and since I just simply didn't get enough stops, and they didn't make enough shots to kind of make up for the fact that they didn't get enough stops. You know, if CMOS had a really good shooting night, they would have been a good chance to win. If they would have gotten the foul line a little more, they would have had a good chance to win. If they'd gotten a couple more stops, they had a good chance to win. But Villanova played really well. Cincinnati didn't play their best game, and that's enough to lose on the road.
Well, all right. Well, I had to cut it a bit short tonight, Mark. I appreciate it for that. Got to deal with some issues around here, but I appreciate that take for the Bearcats. And we'll cut this one short, maybe go a little bit later next week if we can. But I want to thank everyone for tuning in this evening, and we'll get this podcast up on the website tomorrow. I appreciate you, Mark, and hope everyone has a nice evening. And thank you for your time.
Thanks, everybody. Go Bearcats.